Kwandu on 702.
3 minutes after 10 o'clock, this is the Kwandu feature where we look at African customs, African belief systems, spirituality and so forth. And tonight, I'm joined by Siyabonga Mkhize, African Spiritual Advisor and MD at Umsamo. And we are talking about children specifically who have the ancestral calling. How does the educational system in South Africa support all of that? How should it be supporting that? And he joins me now on the line. Kabazela, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Aubrey, and good evening to the listeners of 702.
So children, how as young as how old, get the ancestral calling and how does it look like?
So the symptoms or the signs in a child with an ancestral calling can start from the ages as early as 2 years old or 3 years old.
Really, eh? Two?
Yes. It can start that early. The signs and symptoms. There's symptoms that are typical between the ages of 8 years old. And then there's symptoms that are typical for the age of 8 to about 13 years old. Then there's symptoms that are typical for those between the ages of 13 and, say, 18 years old. But I think what's important is that we clearly establish that underage initiation or training of children is anyone under the age of 18 who hasn't completed their matric certificate. So
is this according to legislation?
I'm not sure about legislation, but according to how we operate at Umsamo, we do not believe any child under the age of 18 or someone who hasn't had the opportunity to complete their studies and receive a matric certificate should not be undergoing any kind of initiation or intwaso in any way, shape, or form.
Shouldn't intwaso trump academic education?
Sorry, say that again.
Shouldn't intwaso, in other words, the initiation of a possible healer, shouldn't it, in terms of the doctrine, trump education?
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't trump education because you've got to remember that the physical and mental abilities of this individual and their capacity, right, they don't have the capacity to handle the spiritual journey that is going to come ahead because they are being given the gifts of 100 or 200 year old spirit, but they are still children. They still do not have the mental capacity, the physical capacity, the emotional range to deal with people's problems and people's issues and to undergo that level of that evolution spiritually that takes place. We've even gone as far as saying that some people should be allowed to even finish their undergrad or their postgraduate degree even before undergoing any kind of initiation. But to talk about what we're talking about today, children in school specifically should not be undergoing any kind of initiation, but rather we should be doing following rituals and protocols to buy time for Ijozi and allow them, right, to continue with their education up until they're at a stage where they are emotionally and mentally prepared for the journey ahead.
Is it up to us? Is it up to us that that a child who has the ancestral calling, which I imagine is a divine calling, is it up to us to decide when and how and under which circumstances they can go for initiation? Surely the divine is wiser than us. And I'm being a little facetious here, Siyabonga, because I'm trying to get to understand what is the status of the ancestral calling vis-a-vis our ability to delay the initiation process thereof. How much power do we have to keep it at bay, as it were? Because you probably be aware that there are people who say that once the calling has come, the calling has come, you can do nothing about it. So I'm interested in some of the doctrinal understanding of that space.
So people, for those that say when the calling has come and there's nothing you can do about it, isn't correct. Ijozi, there are people too. There is always a degree or room for negotiation, but you can't negotiate without accepting and acknowledging first. So you can accept and acknowledge and embrace that the child is spiritually gifted with a particular ancestral spirit, with a gift which might be prophetic or church-based or maybe ubongo. That's not important. Once you've gone through the process of embracing and accepting, you then can go. You then have the option to negotiate. With Idlozi, the contract works different, right? Most people negotiate the terms of the contract before they sign. You have to sign the contract first, and then you negotiate the terms afterwards. And there's a lot of room and a lot of degree that you have. There's a great negotiation space that you have with your ancestors once you have accepted. The only reason why people feel that once the calling is there, it must be taken immediately is because they don't teach people the art of negotiating with your ancestors. And we are just pushing children prematurely into initiation schools. And even then, we're also misdiagnosing. We are misdiagnosing ubuya kwempande, in other words, the return of a certain ancestral spirit and the need for actual initiation to take place, because the two can be confused.
Tell me, what are the symptoms of a calling for a child? You choose at which age. How do we know that this is the symptoms of a calling specifically and not just maybe a medical condition?
Okay. So the general rule of thumb, a good principle to have, rather, is when your doctors say early onset or the condition of the child or the medical affliction or condition that they have does not suit their height, weight, gender, and their demographics, then you know there was something wrong spiritually. But to be more specific, between the ages of 3 and 8, we're looking at your neurodevelopmental milestones, right? Your ADHDs, your ADD, your ASDs, your ability to speak, your speech development issues when it comes to your ability to read as well, the ability of the child to go to the bathroom on their own, or is the child not able to go to the bathroom on their own? Is the child still soiling themselves in their bed, or they're still wetting the bed when they're asleep? We're looking between the ages of 3 and 8, we're looking predominantly at the neurodevelopmental disorders and your cognitive abilities and the child's ability to reason. When they say that the child is a bit of a slow learner and they struggle to comprehend things mentally, that's between the ages of 3 and 8. The ages of about 8 to maybe 15 and teenagehood, we're looking now more at that stage of, that's when some girls would start developing their periods and they have their first menstrual cycle. So we're now looking at their reproductive ability. How rapidly do they develop physically? When a girl has her first period, is it excessively painful? Is there an excessive blood flow? Very, very heavy, that she has to be hospitalized or she has to take time off school. Those are the kind of symptoms that we're looking at when it comes to an ancestral calling. But the primary concern are those children between the ages of 3 and 8, because that's where there's the largest degree of misdiagnosis. And that's where children are being told that, no, they're going to have to go into initiation school very early. And I've seen stories of 10-year-olds undergoing initiation.
So let me see if I get the principle. If a child demonstrates developmental sort of issues between the ages of 3 and 8, such as perhaps a slower understanding of academic material, or perhaps attention deficits, disorders of one type or the other, those could be signs suggesting that there's an ancestral calling?
Yes, especially, but you've got to couple that with, well, you've got to look at that with the family history as well. Depending on the kind of conditions that their parents have, medically as well, at their ages, that will give you an indication that there are ancestral gifts in the family. So, for instance, if the mother is in her 40s and 50s and she's suffering from, okay, let's say the mother's about 35 and she's suffering from severe hormonal issues, which is affecting her blood pressure, which is affecting her weight, and she's also got fibroids and cysts. She has these hormonal issues and she has these blood pressure issues and these diabetic issues, which are not characteristic of someone of her height and her weight. Then you know that, okay, fine, the child, that in the family, in the lineage, that there is an ancestral calling, because there are symptoms that children will experience and there's symptoms that adults will experience.
How do we know it definitively?
Okay, so what you will look at is you got to go through the family tree. So if the grandmother, for instance, had cancer that started in her 70s and she passed away in her 80s, right? And then the mother had cancer in her 60s. Sorry, let's say the mother had cancer, passed away from cancer at about in her early 60s, but it started in her 50s. And then the daughter has cancer in her 20s and it rapidly progresses and passes away in the 30s. If you go down the family tree, what you're seeing is a pattern of earlier onset and more rapid progression. That's how you know that this particular cancer has a spiritual underlying cause to it. Because as you get older, the likelihood of you developing cancer does increase as you get older, because your cells lose the ability to stop uncontrolled rapid proliferation. But if you're looking down the family tree and the same symptoms that your mother had, the same symptoms that your grandmother had, this, as you go down, they start at an earlier age and they are progressing at a more rapid rate, then you know that that symptom has a spiritual underlying cause.
Is it only cancer that gives us these indications, or is it other diseases?
Oh, so the cancer was just one example, but the ones that we looked at are strokes, cancers, diabetes, heart failure, liver failure, kidney failure, more particularly the strokes. So if someone who is got good cholesterol, good height, good weight, and as the age of 25 or 27 should not be having a stroke, right? So when we look at those kind of conditions, especially things like CKD, the kidney disorder as well. It's all about if your biology says that you should not be having this, but you've got it, then we know there's something wrong spiritually. But that isn't to necessarily say that spiritual intervention is going to be the cure, because the symptom still persists, right? So we do still promote that the individual still continues to see their physician for the CKD, because no one can make kidney failure disappear overnight. But what we can do is, by resolving the spiritual underlying cause, the Western medicine intervention is in a better position to be more successful.
What if there is no way of knowing this family tree information? In other words, a child doesn't know about this. The family doesn't know about this. Child is perhaps brought up by a foster family in an orphanage. And it's really coming closer to our conversation about schools, for example, as to how do teachers diagnose this? Because they will be the ones that are in close proximity to children. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about that COVID moment where, you know, people were suffering and often dying. People that were fit and strong and were simply, was that a spiritual moment? Maybe you'll give us a thought about that. But how do we get a more definitive understanding, given the levels of, shall I call it, ignorance about how to decode diseases that have been in our families, their frequency, all of the things that you've spoken about? Most people don't know about that. Is there a more definitive way of knowing? And how can teachers specifically, who spend a lot of time with our children, know that this is a possible situation? I'm hearing a lot of people, you know, sending people to pediatricians. Then there's administration of what do they call it? This Ritalin and all sorts of things that start to happen. How do we know and how do we handle this, particularly at schools?
Okay, so with handling it at schools, it's more complex than handling it in the workplace, in the sense that you have to work with the parents. And at times with the parents, there may be an element of ignorance or disbelief or, you know, entirely being outright against it. So the only thing that the teacher can do in that instance is being able to refer the child to the right person. So what I would recommend, and this is what we're actually doing with other schools, is we always recommend one or two people on site that are trained to handle a child that has a spiritual awakening in the classroom or at school. We have one or two people that as an organization were trained to be able to identify, right, that this child might have a spiritual issue. And in the event that it, and only then would we be brought in when they have recommended that myself or someone else from the organization comes in. So I think it's too great of a burden to place on the teacher to say that they should be able to definitively identify it, but rather we recommend that they simply refer it to it to the, so how, say, the same way schools have an individual who's responsible for first aid.
Yeah.
You would do the same thing for one. You'd have your spiritual first aid individuals, and they would refer the child to that person. And then that person would then engage myself, and then we would chart a path on how do we best engage the parents. Because we can't obviously, all we can do is make recommendations to the parents and hope that we can work together. But we do understand that we have to respect the parents' wishes at the end of the day, but we do give a fully informed to all the information that they need, and we give them a recommendation. So it's too great a burden of any school teacher to say that, look, be able to identify. Yeah. But what we encourage schools to do, which I think a lot of schools, some schools are getting there. I mean, we're working with a couple at the moment, and we're getting there, that we train one or two individuals. And when the two individuals are there, because there's always someone on site, should anything take place, and then only then when it's out of their hands or they're not able to handle it, then they will call someone such as ourselves. So a guideline that would need to be written up in a policy.
Yeah.
A guideline needs to be written up the same way you have a fire protocol, the same way you have a protocol should someone collapse, right? You do the same thing for spiritual awakening.
How would you know that this is a spiritual awakening episode? And I want to go back also to the question I asked earlier about when there is no access to information about the family tree. We don't know. Are there other symptoms, other ways of determining that this is not just a biological or psychological episode, but that it is definitively connected to the spiritual ancestral calling?
So, number one, if the child has been happy and healthy and has shown no signs of any way, of any shape or form of having seizures, and then one day they do have a seizure, right? But in that fit or in that seizure, they start speaking in tongues, or they start speaking a different language, which they typically would not speak, or they start acting completely out of character during that particular episode, because you've spent the past 4, 5, maybe 6 years with this child, and everybody knows him, this child, and they're now speaking a different language. They're now acting completely out of character in that particular moment, right? Then we can say, okay, fine, that this thing is tied spiritually, more particularly when there's that moment of speaking in tongues or speaking in a completely different language, as if they don't necessarily, they're not aware of what has taken place, not aware of what has been, what is, what they are saying.
Yeah.
And then when they come to, right, they are, and you ask them to recollect what has taken place, they are unable to do that because it was a, It was an episode. It was an awakening. So that is one of the biggest, because that's the most common that we're finding at schools at the moment, is the fits, the seizures, as well as those moments where they do speak in tongues. And if it happens at a very Christian school, then they would take a, if it happens at a very church-based school, they would take a church-based approach, and they would say, no, he's speaking in tongues, when he's actually not speaking in tongues, we are famba. So that's when the ancestral spirit completely takes over the child's voice, and the child, and then it speaks through the child. So by taking a church-based approach for a gift, yobungoma actually heightens it makes things worse, and it further exacerbates the problems and heightens the spiritual awakening.
Order 1-883-0702. Gabby J on X says, Aubrey, without being insensitive to the cultural norms, does it ever happen that other races or ethnic groups also get these spiritual callings, or does it happen only among black groups? I gather in the rest of the world, those callings are viewed as mental illnesses, says Gabby J. How do you respond to that, Sebo?
Okay, so first of all, I think Gabby J is being a little hard on herself. The question is not insensitive in any way, shape, or form. It's a lovely question. And to answer her question, this problem affects people. The calling affects people of all races, not just black people, because we can't accept the notion of Mendelian genetics and ignore and discard it when it comes to the inheritance that comes with spiritual callings, right? So Mendelian genetics says that if there is an element, because we did have black and white interacting with one another, whether it be consensually, and at moments were non-consensually based on the history of our country and the world, right? Not all sexual relations that are interracial were consensual, we understand that, but they did take place. And in those moments, there would be the exchange of spiritual gifts. So issues of spirituality also affect white people, they affect black people, they affect Muslim people as well. And we've actually helped, we've been helping people of various races. There was another case at a private boys' school, I won't mention the name, of what we'd call umkhokha, where the spiritual predisposition of a particular pattern of death to repeat itself, where the firstborn grandfather killed himself, firstborn son was a father, killed himself. And then I think at the time I was giving a talk and they had an issue with the boy in matric who also tried to kill himself, who was the firstborn son. So I said, no, that is umkhokha.
What is umkhokha?
Umkhokha is the spiritual predisposition for a particular pattern of death to repeat itself in a family. So if someone passes away by a gunshot wound, right, someone else in the family is going to die by a gunshot. And if that is not closed, if that is not resolved, there will be more and more people in the family that are dying by gunshot. So it's this violent loop of death that continues to repeat itself, and it's almost like a black hole that collects as many people as it can with that particular method of death.
Okay, and what you see, I think my question is what do people who are not trained do when episodes of this nature come? And they have no access to Siyabonga Mkize or Umsam. Because you can only, I suppose, react on the basis of what you know and understand. And most children showing these kinds of symptoms would probably be referred to a psychologist or to a pediatrician or to whatever the case may be, a therapist of one form or the other. And what I'm hearing here is that there is perhaps another level of reference, of referral, that should be considered under these circumstances. What do teachers And I go back to teachers because this is where our children spend most of their time. What should they be looking for and how should they react?
First, safety first is the golden rule. Safety first. If someone does have an episode, you want to make sure that they are physically safe, that they can't hurt their head, that they can't hurt themselves, and that they can't hurt anybody else. So before we even try and diagnose this problem, before we even try and start doing a box-ticking exercise of the various symptoms and identify them, is the individual safe? Are other children safe? Are you, as an educator, are you safe? So before we even do any of that, let's just make sure the person's safe. If you, the, most of the time when they have the episodes, chances are they're going to collapse. So you need to gauge the space in that you need to be close enough to be ready to help them break their fall, but you can't be too close that you almost cause spiritual claustrophobia in that you begin to overwhelm them because you're too close. So it's a difficult one to kind of gauge, but you want to be close enough that, you know what, if you collapse, you're not going to hit your head on the concrete floor, I can catch you and we can break your fall. And then when the individual does collapse, you want to let them sleep for as long as they need to be. Don't wake someone up when they've had their episode. You let them come to on their own, which come to on their own. And obviously, depending on what has happened, if you are able to break their fall and there's nothing medically of concern, then let them sleep. But if they have hit their head pretty hard and you are concerned about their neck, then do get the paramedics and do get the emergency services, because safety first, their physical health is a very is extremely important. So safety first, right? Break their fall and allow them to come to on their own. But whilst they are asleep, right, or out of it, you do need to contact the parents, contact the person on it. Contact the parents, that's the first thing to do, and let them know what has happened. And chances are the parents will have an idea of their own spiritual history in the family, that, look, this used to happen to his father when he was younger, but he outgrew it. Or this used to happen to my father. You know, parents have a good understanding of their own history as well as to the symptoms, because symptoms always mirror each other. The symptoms that my son will experience are no different to the ones that I would have experienced, are no different to the ones that my father would have experienced.
Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. Yeah. Children who have the ancestral calling, how do you behave? What do you do under those circumstances? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 11-883-0702. Siyabonga Mkize is my guest, African spiritual advisor and MD of Umsamo. You would agree with me, Kabazela, that these issues are not mainstream, at least openly so. And it sounds to me that there are policies that you are talking about that can be written as to the behavior of teachers under those circumstances, pretty much, as you said, like a fire drill in that sense. Have we got such documents prepared already from an Umsamo perspective?
So we've got our own internal ones that we would then personalize and cater to depending on the company's demands and their organization. So I think the one company that we worked with was they made trains. So they were an industrial company. So their protocol was very different to, say, what we would do for people that are working in schools. So it would be sitting down with usually we work with the transformation and diversity officers and the ones that are responsible for inclusivity at schools. And we would also work with those that are responsible for first aid as well. And we would write up with them their guidelines and their protocols for someone that would have an African spiritual calling or an awakening, and that would sit with them. And then those are the people that we would regularly train. So about twice a year, when we would have new information and new insights and new procedures and new protocols, we would train them. And in the event that they resign or they leave the school, then we would make sure that we would ask the school to appoint someone new, and then we would work with that new individual. But we generally try our best to make sure that there is always at any given point in time on the school premises, there must be at least one individual who is trained. Because obviously some teachers go on trips and holidays and they go on leave. So they just need to have a schedule where there's always at least one individual who's capable of handling an awakening.
Yaya Jeremy on X says, why is this thing happening more now compared to maybe 20 years ago? Why are we having kids with ancestral gifts in schools more these days? I remember asking that question to Gogo Dineo Ndlanzi around what seems to be a proliferation of people with a calling, people who are claiming to have a calling and so forth. Why? Why are we seeing more of this happening? Is it because we are more... we talk about it more freely as opposed to perhaps back in the day, these things were kept on the hush-hush. In fact, there were laws against this at some point. And is it true that it's happening more now, or is it just a matter of us talking about it more and more freely now?
It isn't necessary. Yes, it is happening more now. But it's also happening more now because contextually, it's the best possible time for all the suppressed, all the oppressed ancestral spirits and gifts that never had an opportunity to manifest. Now, this is the best time for them to return and actually manifest. That's the first reason. That's the first reason to your first answer to your question. The second answer, or the second part of the answer to your question, to Steve's question, is there is not necessarily a proliferation of callings, but there is a return of ancestral gifts that have been denied, right? So if your father denies the ancestral calling for whatever reason, myself and all of my siblings will present with symptoms of a calling, but not necessarily all four of us need to go in Twasa, right? So the biggest problem we have is we are misdiagnosing being descendants of people that are gifted and had callings and being gifted and having a calling ourselves. We have more descendants of people that were gifted and had a calling, as opposed to people who are gifted and have a calling and need to undergo initiation. You will always have, so for instance, my father has his gift that he practices, and there's five of us at home. Not all five of us are going to Twasa, but if my father doesn't answer his calling, all five of us will present with symptoms. And if we all go see a healer, all five of us will be told that we need to Twasa because they are seeing the gifts that are in the family history and in the lineage. So I do think that there is a significant degree of misdiagnosis because of misunderstanding the difference between being gifted and a descendant and just being a descendant. So once we resolve and
So hold on. So there are people that are gifted. These are people that would be expected to go in Twasa at the appropriate time.
Yes.
And then there are people who are just descendants of gifted people. So you're saying to me that they would have an aftertaste of the gift operating in them at some level, and they don't have to go and be initiated?
Correct.
How do we know?
That is why when someone presents with symptoms, we resolve the past first to say that we atone and we cleanse with the ancestors, say that my father did not accept his calling. On his behalf, we apologize and we ask of the family to be cleansed of that. Once that cleansing has taken place, then it can become clear as to who is supposed to take the calling. And no answer is an answer. So if Ijozi doesn't definitively say that Usiyabonga is going to take the calling, then that means the person who's meant to take the calling is possibly not even been born yet. It's going to be one of our children. But because my father did not answer his calling, right, all of us have the spiritual and the genetic biomarker of an unanswered ancestral calling. That is in all our DNA. It is in all our blood. We will all present to all healers with that, right? But what you can't see, right, in any consultation is whether or not I'm a descendant and gifted or if I'm just a descendant. So what the mistake that we do in African spirituality is we see the biomarker, we see what's in the DNA, we see the unanswered spiritual gift, and we assume that it must be answered within class or an initiation. When we don't think that perhaps this individual is just a descendant of someone who was supposed to answer a gift, not necessarily that the burden of answering the gift lies on their shoulders. Hence, there is such a significant degree of misdiagnosis and many people saying that I went to initiation school for 5 years and I spent 50,000 rand and nothing happened.
Let's talk to Anonymous in Johannesburg. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead, Anonymous.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Sorry, Anonymous, we're losing you. I'm not sure whether you're using a, what do they call these things, a handset. You just sound very far.
Yeah, it sounds like he's driving with the window open.
Yes, I'm driving.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now we can hear you. Go ahead.
Fantastic. Thank you for this opportunity.
Sure.
Firstly, I must apologize. I was just listening to another radio station. I was just flipping through the channels, and I found you in the middle of this conversation. But just a quick one here. I don't want to waste your precious time. The reason I choose to remain anonymous is that I have a son who is 9 years old, and he experiences all these episodes that your guest alluded to, except that he doesn't speak in tongues. Just to give a bit of background, if time allows, I really don't want to waste your time.
You're not wasting our time. Go ahead.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yep.
My son, the whole of last year, and the last quarter of last year, the year before, he couldn't attend his grade one owing to this. Eventually, we took him to the hospital. I'm not going to mention the name. He's currently seeing a pediatrician, a neurologic pediatrician.
Yep.
And clearly, I'm not a doctor. I'm not casting aspersion on the doctor or anyone in that field.
Yeah.
But I can tell that the medication is not really working at all because he is supposed to take 10 tablets in a day, 5 in the morning and 5 6 in the morning and 6 in the evening.
Yeah.
So it's a 12-hour period type of thing. And unfortunately, he only experiences this episode between 3 and 6 in the morning. During the day, he's fine. He's riding his bicycle. He's fine. He's happy. The most recent one that he had was a day before yesterday in the morning.
What happens? What happens, Anonymous? What happens?
More details of the episodes, please.
The seizure. He gets a seizure.
Okay.
The seizure that will last for approximately about 2 minutes to 3 minutes. The most recent one was 3 minutes. And he was jacking.
Yeah.
And afterwards he would start crying. And he would cry and cry but with his eyes closed.
Yes.
You know. He would cry. Afterwards he would cry. He doesn't speak in tongues or anything.
Sure.
But he would cry. But just to give you a background, there was a time when he kept on saying, Daddy, I feel like people are going to come into our house and break in. And I said, there's no way people are going to break into this house. I mean, we live in a gated community. We've got electrical fence. But guess what? When my brother came over, when he was helping us with his situation, my brother forgot to lock the security gate. And people came in. They didn't break in. And they stole things. And just to give you a background, my late dad was a prophet who was like very senior in one of the African churches.
Yeah.
And so is my mom. My mom is currently a prophet in one of the African churches.
Yeah. There's a history of gifted folks in the family and your son, based on the conversation we're hearing, seems to be exhibiting some of these. Anonymous, I'm going to let you go. I'd like Siyabonga to respond to you. I can hear the concern in your voice.
Yes, and just for 10 seconds, if you can allow me to.
Yep.
I also have something in me where I'm just able to guess things about people. I can meet someone like you and say, hey, how, what? Your name is probably Aubrey, and you probably work for 702, and you studied at VET. And you find that all that information is accurate. Thank you.
Anonymous, thanks very much for your call. First of all, Siyabonga, how prevalent is this? I mean, is this quite a prevalent thing? And are parents going to be calling in more and more tonight to say, hey, this is happening, because they feel the sense that we are talking more freely about this? But then what do you make of Anonymous's call? How do we help him?
So to answer your first question, in terms of prevalence, I can't give an accurate statistical number in terms of prevalence, but I can tell you that there are a lot of parents that are struggling quietly with their children, because especially in the Black community, you don't want people to know that your child is sick, in inverted commas, or has an issue, right? There are many parents that are suffering quietly. And to answer the second part of the question as to how do we help Anonymous, from the sound of, I mean, it's a pity that he had to go, because my first question would be to his father. How old was he when he passed away, and what was the cause of death? Reason being, from the sound of things, that the prophetic gift on its own is not sufficient, is not the only thing that's there at that family. There's another part, Yobungoma, or another side, which hasn't been taken care of entirely or may have been neglected and is now coming through this child here. That's what might be going on in that family.
Well, you're going to give your contact details, Siyabonga, and Anonymous can get in touch with you directly. I think that part of the reason why he's decided to be anonymous is because he'd like a certain level of confidentiality in his story.
So you give
us your contact details as we close. But I want to take one more call from Lucky in Orlando, East Soweto. Hi, Lucky.
Hi, bro. Sorry, bro.
I'm very well, thank you, bro. Lucky, what's on your mind?
Hi, bro.
There's something that bothers me here.
Yeah, because here, Bona, if this thing is directed to family, say I'm in Sapo family.
Yes.
And then there's something like this. Why must I go and consult somewhere? You know?
You're basically asking if something, if there's a calling in your specific family, why would you have to go and consult somebody outside of your family?
Exactly. Great parents,
Vasile,
those who come
after them. Okay, let's see what Siyabonga has to say, Lucky.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Lucky. To answer his question, we actually give people a step-by-step process on what they should do prior to coming to us. We have an abundance of content that we tell people what to do at home before coming to consult, because consulting should really be a final measure. You know, you don't go to your GP when you are sick. You first start with over-the-counter medication, right? You first start with things at your home. You start with your bicarbonates of sodas and whatnot to try and make yourself better. The same should be taken when it comes to African spirituality and your and spiritual health as well. I didn't say that you should consult with us. On a systematic level, they shouldn't have to consult with us, because we should be readily, people such as myself or people that we've been that we have trained should be readily available on site, that they would be able to assist them. So, yeah, perhaps there was a misunderstanding, but we don't promote consulting because it's a calling at home. In fact, we put out an abundance of content and teachings on what to do and how you resolve.
But I think his question, Siyabonga, is more less about yourselves as Umsamo, but as the culture that's out there. Man, there's sangomas everywhere these days.
Yeah.
Bonke banimsamo. Everybody unendumba, right? Mm. And there is a sense. In fact, Celeste Mbaria says, bro, why this ancestral thing only big in South Africa, says this person. And I suppose it's the same question in a different way, that says we're seeing a greater proliferation of the ancestral calling in South Africa than we've seen before. And I think what Lucky is asking is why is it that now generally we are being told we need to go and consult and consult and consult, and you're saying no. In fact, you shouldn't be going to consult and consult and consult. What should he be doing?
So the problem is that the lack of knowledge, right, is the biggest reason why people consult. There's two reasons why people consult. Lack of knowledge and secrets. Those two things, right? Exactly that. The grandparents have the answers. They have the information, but they want to take it to their graves. So as young people, we are almost forced to go and consult when we should not have to, when the information is sitting with our parents and it was sitting with our grandparents. So sometimes it isn't people in our space that are telling people to go consult. At some point, we also need to hold our parents and our grandparents accountable for creating the need for over-consultation.
Kabazel, give us your contact numbers, especially for Daddy Anonymous, who called earlier on. I just felt him. I just felt his I felt his anguish.
Okay.
How does he get in touch with you?
So everything is CM Kize on all social medias, right? And if he wants the number, WhatsApp or cell phone, it's 060-531-0157. That's on WhatsApp and normal call.
Siyabonga Mkhize, thank you very much. African spiritual advisor and MD at Umsamo.